Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome again to the Explaining History podcast, and today I want to talk a little bit about the expansion of the SS during the 1930s. The SS goes through a number of key transitions during the 1930s. The first, of course, is following the Night of the Long Knives. So prior to the Night of the Long Knives, the coup against the leadership of the SA, where they are arrested, about 300 or so are arrested at Bad Wiesberg and executed. The concerns that Hitler had about the SA, the Sturmabteilung, the brown shirts, had been mounting for almost a year, and they had been fueled by Heinrich Himmler, head of the SS. The SS was a subsection of the SA at this point, and had been established in the mid-1920s as kind of Hitler's Praetorian Guard, Hitler's sort of elite bodyguard. But throughout the 1920s and 30s, the role of the SS dramatically changes and begins to sort of expand and spread and become a kind of entirely kind of amorphous kind of entity, moving into all sorts of kind of different areas of regime life. The fact that Hitler was so fond of creating parallel institutions that mirrored and subverted state institutions, a parallel kind of legal system, and a parallel kind of system of imprisonment, meant that there was lots of scope for a kind of a mass parallel organisation like the SS. The Night of the Long Knives is, and it was the culmination of a long process of the breakdown in relations between Hitler and the SA. The SA had never viewed itself, not really been formally part of the Nazi Party, it had really been kind of the auxiliary paramilitary wing of the Nazi movement. So it was reorganized by Insterrom at Hitler's insistence during the 1920s. But many brown shirts viewed the party members as simply another sort of face of the bourgeoisie. The rhetoric that Rome used in the period 1933 to 1934, it often talks about this, about how the pen pushers of the party would have to eventually be swept aside if they tried to get in the way of what Rome saw as the next phase of the German Revolution. Hitler, 6 months into the Nazi regime, said that there would, in his one of his kind of taking stock sort of meetings, said that there would be no second revolution, that the idea was not necessary, that the bad elements had been swept away, And now what was necessary was the consolidation of the regime. And so the prospect of a kind of an increasingly restless SA alarmed Hitler. Much of this was Rome's drunken talk and rhetoric. And much of this was blown out of all proportion by Goering, Himmler and Goebbels, alarming Hitler with lurid stories about secret conspiracies within the SA. But there had been another problem that the SA had represented. When Hitler is appointed as Chancellor on the 30th of January 1933, the SA are able to act in whatever way they see fit, by and large, for the next 6 months. As Minister President of Prussia, Goering had given the SA essentially auxiliary police powers, enabling them to arrest who they want and remain effectively above the law. The result of this was that the promise that Hitler made about restoring law and order in Germany becomes increasingly farcical as the SA are able to go on a violent rampage for the next 6 months and discredit themselves or discredit the regime in the eyes of those crucial middle-class voters who Hitler is trying to court and reassure. One thing that was very attractive was the idea that law and order was going to be restored to Germany, and the SA's example tended to suggest otherwise. So the final straw for the SA is the decision by Rome to write to Defence Minister Blomberg and demand that the army be essentially absorbed into the SA. The army would now become a training corps to teach the new SA how to fight as a professional military organisation, and the Blomberg and the generals saw this as really being kind of effectively the end of the German army. And Hitler's deal with the army was that if something was done about Ernst Röhm, then the army would give Hitler a personal oath of loyalty. Not simply just an oath of loyalty from the officer corps to the German Republic, but to Hitler himself. The task of dealing with Röhm is done swiftly and ruthlessly. And many Germans afterwards, when news leaks out a week or two later, look upon what is done as being, if unpleasant, then certainly necessary. The result was that the SS were given their autonomy. They became a separate institution under Heinrich Himmler, and they begin to rapidly grow from there. Now, we've looked at throughout the last few months at the development of the camp system that falls under the auspices of the SS. But now let's look at how the SS develop out of the camp system. And again, we're looking at KL by Niklas Waschmann. And he writes today about the military ambitions of Heinrich Himmler in the mid-1930s. And he says, Himmler liked to see the camp SS as soldiers. By presenting his men as warriors, fighting the scum of Germany, he hoped to boost their profile and elevate them above mere prison guards. But Himmler's use of military imagery was more than just rhetoric. From early on, he envisaged his guards as paramilitaries who patrolled not only the make-believe battlefields inside camps, but who would also serve beyond the barbed wire during national emergencies, as the Dachau SS had done during the Rome Putsch in 1934. Hardened by the confrontation with enemies in concentration camps, he argued his special forces could be trusted to fight terrorists outside. The transformation of the SS guard troops into a paramilitary force began early, already in the mid-1930s. Sentry service around the KL was just one of their duties. As we've seen, the men spent considerably more time on military drills. Initially, guard troop commanders struggled with poor equipment. In Dachau, they did not even have enough reserve munitions. This changed after Hitler agreed to fund the Death's Head SS from the Reich budget. More weapons for combat now poured into the guard troops, which set up additional machine gun formations. In Dachau, the dilapidated old barracks were replaced by a vast training camp, symbolising the military intentions of the SS. In Sachsenhausen too, a big new complex was built by prisoners near the camp as a base for SS excursions. In Sachsenhausen, meanwhile, prisoners constructed a new and modern shooting range, complete with movable targets. Most significantly, the SS continued to recruit far more guard troops than it needed for the running of the camps. SS personnel rose from an estimated 1,700 in January 1935 to 4,300 3 years later, keeping the staff-inmate ratio well between 1 to 2. Although the force was still small, there was no mistake of the ambitions of its leaders. Now, there's some context here that you might know if you've listened to previous podcasts on the SS that I've done. But the guard troop, and particularly the Death's Head SS, were viewed really as being the inferior cousins of other branches of the organisation. For example, from 1933 onwards, the Liebstandart Adolf Hitler, a special group, a Sonderkommando of the SS, that would eventually form part of the Waffen-SS, the fighting divisions of the SS, were seen as the kind of the elite force in the organisation, and they were led by Sepp Dietrich, who would eventually end the war, trying to prevent the Soviet encirclement of Berlin with the Waffen-SS. The Liebstandart Adolf Hitler was seen as the most kind of attractive and dynamic and purposeful and powerful aspect of the SS. The Camp SS themselves often had ambitions to serve outside the camp. They viewed having to interact with prisoners as being something unpleasant that they didn't really wish to do. They viewed it as sort of a disgrace and a humiliation, and obviously they're ideologically and socially and racially their animus, their hatred was directed towards the prisoners, and they saw being lumbered with the prisoners as a kind of an imposition on ideally what they would prefer to be doing, which was something paramilitary. It was always kind of ill-defined. It was almost the kind of ambition to play soldiers outside the walls of the camp. Himmler himself had these ambitions for them. It's not that Himmler was without his sort of fighting units. As I said, from 1933 onwards, the Liebstandart Adolf Hitler, that eventually becomes the Waffen-SS, is there. Though it's...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things.
Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Very, very small. And I think Himmler thought that it would be possible to use the Camp SS eventually to be the mainstay of kind of an auxiliary army or even a kind of an alternate army. Niklas Waschmann writes, "The creeping militarisation of the camp was part of a bigger plan by Himmler, the creation of an independent SS formations for deployment at the front. The German army, ever since its conflict with the SA leader Ernst Röhm, was paranoid about the military aspirations of Nazi leaders, and in Himmler's case, the generals were right to worry. Despite his hollow denials, Himmler was not content with establishing the SS and police as a force inside Germany. He was gunning for the army's monopoly of military might. Speaking to senior SS commanders in 1938, he claimed that it was their solemn duty to stand tall on the battlefield. Were we not to bring blood sacrifices, and were we not to fight at the front, we would lose the moral right to shoot at shirkers and cowards at home. Using all his guile, his direct line to Hitler, and his talent for bureaucratic sparring, Himmler won the upper hand in the turf war with the army. Initially, his hope of creating an SS division centred mainly on the new SS troop for special duty, formed in autumn 1934 out of different smaller armed units. But also, he also began to consider the use of SS guard troops beyond the German borders, erasing the boundary between the internal and the external front." So, for people like Himmler and Hitler, there had never been any boundary between an internal front, a war fought at home, and an external front, a war fought overseas, or a war fought beyond Germany's borders. Because both wars were always going to be racial wars. And for racial wars, you need racial warriors. The war at home, in Hitler's and Himmler's eyes, was a war, firstly, against the deviant social classes of Germany. Once political opposition had been removed, then deviant social classes, the asocials that we've talked about recently, those who were considered work shy, again, lesbian people, and the sort of the social ballast that Hitler said was the real reason why Germany had lost the First World War. Those people who had been useless eaters, who had been an encumbrance on the Third Reich and led to a failure at war. That was the first enemy. Racial enemies, particularly the Jews, but also the Roma and Sinti people, were the kind of the next target of the regime. And the racial purification of Germany, the racial improvement of Germany in the eyes of Hitler, was really part of the process of preparing Germany for the next war that would ultimately undo the failings of the first one, the losses of the first one. So in 1939, when the forces of the Third Reich and the Soviet Union divide Poland between them, and you have areas such as East Prussia and the Wartegau absorbed into the Reich, and the new colony of the general government in Poland, of central Poland in essence, established. It is administered by the SS because another front in the racial war has opened as far as Hitler and Himmler are concerned. And so racial warriors on the battlefield are what Himmler envisages. This racial warfare is less about fighting battles against Polish and later Soviet army formations, though obviously the Waffen-SS participate in all of that. But it's about the racial struggle that follows that. So the mass killings that occur with by the SS, the army, and the Einsatzgruppen auxiliaries as they follow behind. And it's also about the imprisonment of the Polish population, the elites of the Polish population, and the mass killing and extermination of the Jews and Roma. And this is the kind of racial warfare that Hitler and Himmler envisaged. And the ultimate goal is of Hitler's war was to be a racial goal, not only to demonstrate that the Aryan race in Hitler's ideas about racial struggle was the dominant race, but also then to procure the resources necessary for the kind of the growth of the Aryan race, and also to remove from nature itself the Jews. Kind of critical reading of Mein Kampf by Timothy Snyder, who points out that the way that Hitler conceived of the Jews was that they were actually removed, they were actually sort of something apart from nature, that they were not part of the system of nature whatsoever. They were some kind of malignant force that really didn't have any place in the world whatsoever. And instead of seeing them as a merely an inferior people, he saw them as an existential threat to the continuance of the Aryan race and of civilization in Europe. So Nicholas Rushman continues. The military role of the SS was cemented in the late 30s as the European war loomed ever closer. One landmark was Hitler's secret decree of August the 17th, 1938, drafted by Himmler, which confirmed that SS formations would be deployed on the battlefield. As for the Death's Head units specifically, they would greatly expand to serve as a standing armed SS troop for tackling special duties of a police nature. This cryptic phrase still pointed to a domestic deployment of camp SS men. However, a few months earlier, members of the Dachau Guard Troop had already engaged in a first foray onto foreign soil, marching into Austria in March 1938 under the command of the German army. Soon another opportunity presented itself. In autumn 1938, four Death's Head battalions took part in the occupation of the Sudetenland. They were led by Theodor Eich, who presented his men during the first review on Czech soil to Hitler. The following May, soon after the Death's Head troops had participated in the takeover of the rest of Czech territory, Hitler issued yet another decree officially recognising the military role of SS Death's Head units. In wartime, some camp SS men would join the front line. Now, this, again, presents us with a lot of very interesting possibilities here. That Hitler saw this increasingly paramilitary force as still having some kind of policing role. And the only interpretation I think that is realistic to put on that is that Hitler envisaged them having a kind of a camp and paramilitary role in Poland and in other occupied countries. And this might possibly be evidence of deeper pre-planning of the Holocaust, or it might simply be evidence of Hitler considering how domestic populations would be brought to heel most effectively by an occupying army. The militarisation of the SS gave camp bureaucrats equivalent ranking with Wehrmacht generals. So the pen pushers and kind of casual bullies of the, or well, professional bullies in point of fact, of the SS who had been unable to throw their weight around in the confines of a prison camp, were now able to act out their various fantasies of great high military office. And the most significant example of that was Theodor Eich. In the 1930s, Eich really threw himself into the expansion of the Guard troops, at the expense of the camp system itself. Later on, Rudolf Höss, who was the commandant at Auschwitz, said, "Eich showed incredible generosity when it came to the Guard troop, demanding the best facilities and equipment for them and headhunting new recruits, demanding ever greater numbers to be allocated to him, and poaching even enlisted soldiers from the armed forces. He said, 'Bring them from the bars, bring them from the sports clubs, bring them from the barber. As far as I'm concerned, you can bring them from the brothels. Bring them from every place you meet them.'" There was limited success to this expansion. Eich attracted many new recruits, but the quality of them was questionable. The size of the death's head doubled. By the end of 1938, it was 10,441 troops. But by the following summer, this had grown even further to about 13,000 full-time members. And at the time, at that time, the Death's Head SS were well equipped with weapons, having possession of 800 machine guns, 1,500 machine pistols, 20,000 rifles by mid-1939. And so that meant that by the eve of the Second World War, the SS, the Camp SS particularly, was ready for action and had been fully equipped and was able to fight a war and fight at the front line. Okay, so let's finish there and I'll catch you on the next Explaining History podcast. Thanks very much for listening. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.